Hello, this is Regina. I see that Carol Howe will be here after me. So if there's anybody that's really interested in hearing Carol, hang around. happy Sunday. It's been a wonderful, wonderful Sunday. This morning I was the substitute minister at the Center for Inner Peace, so I gave the service this morning, which was fun. And then after I came home, Jasmine and Danielle and our dog Jamie and I went to the Pueblo City Park and walked along the river. We have a paved walkway along the river. Did a little bit of wading and, you know, a little bit of playing fetch with Jamie. And now we come home and I get to do this. I get to teach the seven steps. So, you know, what a life. It's really wonderful. Tonight we're going to be starting with number 270 in the Seven Steps to Awakening. This is the last of the Sri Annamalai Swami quotes. And then we will begin Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj with 271. And Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj is quickly becoming one of my favorite people to read in the Seven Steps. I really enjoy his quotes. I think last week I told you guys that we would listen to a Muru Ganar song, and I did not bring down the ones that are not in English, which I think are actually my favorite, the ones that are not in English. But I'm going to go ahead and just put in one that's in English. I like the non-English ones. But this one, let's see, which one do I want to play? This one, I may sometimes, I think this is a song where he talks about he may sometimes forget Ramana. And that would be like us sometimes forgetting our purpose. You know, forgetting Ramana would be the symbol for forgetting purpose. Let me find the lyrics here, and I'll read the lyrics to you. Let's say, I may sometimes forget you, Ramana, but my tongue shall forever your name utter. That, for me, that would be, my mind may forget you, but my heart always remembers. That's how that would be interpreted for me. Lord Ramana, Master of Wisdom, shining on the Veda's lofty crown, because I came to you, I've gained this bliss unparalleled, by still clear minds adored. Lord Ramana, Master High, Exalted, Rock of Refuge, Holy Free, because I came to you, I've gained bliss, abounding, boundless, sweet, of which the saints desireless sing. Free Spirit, whom the saints supreme, in silence steeped adore, because I came to you, I've gained the bliss beyond the reach of words, in the heart residing. And again, it still says the chorus in between each of those verses is, I may sometimes forget you, Ramana, but my tongue shall forever your name utter. And one thing that I've noticed in Muru Ganar and Ramana is that they were both devotional, which means that even though they came to realize that all there is self, they still loved having a devotional expression. And so Muru Ganar would express his devotion to Ramana. Ramana would express his devotion to the mountain, Arunachala. Jesus, as we know, expressed his devotion to the Father. We just heard Cheryl, I think, talk about how she likes to express her devotion to the Holy Spirit. So sometimes even when we get beyond the belief in object, beyond the belief in other, we still use the symbol of an other to express devotion, because our heart just really wants to express that devotion. So this is a song by Muru Ganar expressing devotion to Ramana as the symbol. There it is. Thank you. So that was it. And I think it was really nice of them to translate these songs into English for us so that we could hear the lyrics. But to be honest, I think I still love the Tamil versions better. So even though we can't understand them, maybe next week I'll bring one of Muru Ganar's Tamil version songs so you can hear the music and the sound of that. It's very devotional. For now, why don't we just take a moment of silence, and then we'll begin with number 270. Cheryl says she liked that one. I'm glad. Amen. All right, let me give you a link to number 270. The link, of course, is to my journal. If anybody's listening on the radio, you go to rda7stepsjournal.wordpress.com, and the 7 in that is the digit. It is not spelled out. rda7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. We are in step 2, which you will find on the menu bar, and then just select the numbering series that will allow you to find your way to number 270. I will read this final step 2 quote from Sri Annamalai Swami, which is number 270 on page 57 in the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. If you abide as the self, you will see the world as the self. In fact, there will be no world at all. If you abide as the self, you will see the world as the self. In fact, there will be no world at all. All right, we can click on my journal now, number 270. This is what I wrote after contemplating that quote. In awakening, there is one seeing. Seeing one. Until awakening, seek for the one by watching formless present being. Self. You know, it's interesting because I know that you guys have heard the same teachings that I hear. I mean, we hear the teachings that say, you know, seek, continue to seek, continue to seek. And then we hear the teachings that say, stop seeking. And sometimes it sounds confusing. You know, which one do I listen to? I saw someone on Facebook just a couple days ago asking, you know, which one do I listen to? And as far as I know, within my discernment, both are true. They're addressing different circumstances. There's a type of seeking we do that comes from lack, which is coming from a strong belief that we don't have it, you know, whatever it is, you know, the truth, divine self, whatever it is. We don't have it, and somehow we need to get it, and it's seeking outside. It searches. Sometimes it goes from teacher to teacher to teacher, or book to book to book, or religion to religion to religion, trying to get it, trying to obtain it. And that seeking is the seeking that needs to stop, because it doesn't come from outside. And so that seeking isn't helpful, and that seeking needs to stop. We need to stop seeking. But there's another kind of seeking that maybe the word seeking isn't even as perfect. It's more like being pulled or following, but it's still referred to as seeking. And that's the seeking that we do within. That's the seeking that Cheryl and I and some others are using the seven steps to awakening to prompt us into. It's a seeking where we go further and further, deeper and deeper within ourself. And so when there are teachers like Ramana Maharshi, for example, would urge you not to stop seeking, to continue seeking, continue seeking, they're not referring to running all over the place trying to find. They're referring to that continue inward. Continue inward. That's what they mean. Continue inward. And what they're really asking us to do is to continue inward until we know that we have found, for lack of better words, because that is all that we see. When self is all that we see, when self is all that we know, when they're literally, not figuratively, literally is no other, right? Then the seeking is not needed anymore. But until then, the seeking should continue and continue and continue. So in awakening, there is one seeing, seeing one. Until awakening. Until that's all that we know. Until awakening, seek for the one by watching formless present being, self. And of course, anyone who knows about this knows that's an inward directed attention. That's away from the world. And in fact, the more you practice inward directed attention, the more you realize what inward is, because at first it's away from the world, but then it's away from thoughts, right? And then it's away from, you know, attention. I mean, it just keeps getting, you keep seeing more and more things are actually outside of what we call inward. And so your attention is directed away from so many things until at some point the sense is that your attention, that your attention is not really directed on anything anymore, because there's no longer an object that you're defining as inward. At some point there may be an object that you define as inward, such as the heart, you know, the heart. But at some point, because you just keep going inward, you keep going inward, there's not an object to rest your attention or your awareness on anymore. But yet there's still somehow an awareness of that which you can't see, that which you can't touch, that which you can't talk about. So the more we go inward, the more we move away from form, the more we move towards formless present being. And this inward seeking is the seeking that is recommended. And we're also recommended to do it until awakening. Do not stop. Do not stop. Do not stop. So what we can do is scroll down and click on number 271, which is at the bottom underneath the reply and comment section on the left. I will post a link in the room. Cheryl Valentine says, NTI Hebrews really speaks of this experience we are having with the seven steps. So that makes me want to go back and look at Hebrews. We'll see what happens. Several of us have assignments right now. We're actually working in NTI, pulling out quotes. And my assigned area is Revelation. Cheryl has Hebrews. So I'm sure she's finding some good stuff there. All right, so I'm going to read quote number 271 from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. We are now into Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj, and this is his first quote for step two. What do you know of me when even my talk with you is in your world only? Now, this is one thing that was very interesting about Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj, is he spoke from the position of the Absolute, which many, many teachers do not speak from that position. They still speak from a more human-sounding position. But when Sri Nisargadatta spoke, when he said, I, that was the I of God. You know, Muji says, the devil uses I, and God uses I, and, you know, somewhere in between, everywhere in between, I is also used. You know, where are you? When you say I, where are you? What's your I? Well, for Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj, it was the Absolute, what might be called God. He always spoke from that I. What do you know of me? He's not referring to the man. He's referring to the Absolute. What do you know of me when even my talk with you is in your world only? All right, so looking at the journal, number 271. The filter of this world, or the filter of this mind, colors everything so that nothing is seen purely. This is why one must be patient with seeing, with experience, and with thinking. The world and personal experience may tell one story, but one does best not to dive into that story. Sit back patiently, waiting for the seeing that is one. Well, this reminds me very much of NTI Luke chapter 6, actually. It's one of my favorite sections in NTI. But what this is saying, intellectually we all know this, but taking this into practice is a different story. And it's really, we need to take this into practice. What this is saying is that what we see is based on what is believed in our mind. Sometimes it's worded, it's based on what we expect to see. And so what's interesting about that is that means that our seeing proves to us that our beliefs or our expectations are true. We keep proving to ourselves that, you know, it's true, this thing I think, because there it is again, right? But what this is saying is that we really cannot trust our seeing because it's based on our beliefs and expectations. You know, we are literally deluding ourselves with our beliefs and expectations. And every time we choose to believe what we see, every time we say, see, there's proof, I told you he's like this, we're just reconfirming our own beliefs. And it's just, it's a cycle that we can't get out of as long as we continue to believe what we see. So there comes a point in the awakening process when we need to be willing to understand that just because I saw it, or just because I experienced it, just because it appears true, does not mean it is true. Literally, we need to be willing to say, I can't trust my own seeing. You know, we're all familiar with the saying, seeing is believing, right? Well, this is saying, no, I can't trust my own seeing. You know, when I look at him, this is what I think I see, but I can't trust my own seeing. We need to back off from that. The filter of this world, or the filter of this mind, colors everything so that nothing is seen purely. Then it says, this is why one must be patient with seeing, with experience, and with thinking. The world and personal experience may tell one story, but one does best not to dive into that story. Sit back patiently, waiting for the scene that is one. I think it's very interesting how the word patience is being used here. Because what this is telling me is that although I may have a decision, for example, a conscious decision that I do not want to continue to see, let's say, a person in a particular way, the habitual seeing may continue even after I've made the decision. And when that habitual seeing continues even after I've made the decision, I have two choices. I fall back into the seeing and believing cycle, or I remain patient with my decision. Even though the appearance continues, I remain patient with my decision, literally realizing that I'm looking at an echo of the past. This is my old choices showing up for me now. And I just be patient. And I don't dive fully into that story. I don't dive fully into that scene, right? I just stay in a state of patience, knowing that at some point my scene will change. The filter of this world, or the filter of this mind, colors everything so that nothing is seen purely. This is why one must be patient with seeing, with experience, and with thinking. So this is also true of my own thoughts. You know, I have a habitual thought pattern about my job, for example. Maybe for years and years and years I've hated work, right? I go into work every day dreading it, and one day I realize I'm doing this to myself. I don't have to hate my job. You know, I can start to look at this differently. But then maybe for some period of time, that dread thought, as soon as I walk into the office, that dread thought naturally appears because it's a habit. It's been there so long. So I need to be patient with my dread thought, even after I've made the decision not to think that way anymore. The thinking is still appearing, echoes of the past. And so I need to be patient with that thought without diving into it fully, right? But be patient with the fact that it's still appearing, until it's not anymore. The filter of this world, or the filter of this mind, colors everything so that nothing is seen purely. This is why one must be patient with seeing, with experience, and with thinking. The world and personal experience may tell one story, but one does best not to dive into that story. Sit back patiently, waiting for the seeing that is one. All right, you can scroll down on the left underneath comment and reply and click on number 272. And And there's the link for the room. And I will read the second. Oh, my mic keeps falling. I don't know if you guys can hear that when it falls or not. Okay, I will read the second quote. Number 272, again, this is from Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. I love saying that fast. Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. Danielle's eating a pickle. Second pickle. All right. So somebody was actually asking Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj a question. So here's the question. Is your world full of things and people, as is mine? And Maharaj answers, no, it is full of myself. Which is kind of funny because, you know, in America, that would be kind of an insult to someone to say, you're full of yourself. But here we have God, the Absolute, speaking, saying, my world is full of myself, right? It's full of myself. So let's look at my journal and see what I wrote after contemplating that. Can I honestly say that all I see, all I know, is self? Is there ever an instant when I experience an other, something other than self? Well, the answer to that is yes. The answer to that is absolutely. You know, absolutely. You know, sometimes somebody will say something to me, and my thought is kind of like, well, that's your point of view. But in that's your point of view, there suddenly becomes this separation of, I don't see it that way, you do. Right? There isn't necessarily a judgment there, I'm going to say, because I'm actually okay with people having their own point of view. So it's not like you shouldn't have that point of view. It's not like you should see like I do, right? It's just still a feeling of separation. That's how she thinks and this is how I think, right? So I cannot honestly say that all I see, all I know is self. To say that would be to lie to myself. And as far as I can tell, the seven steps, although it is guiding me to the one scene, it's not asking me to lie on the way there and pretend like I'm there when I'm not. So can I honestly say that all I see, all I know is self? Is there ever an instant when I experience an other, something other than self? And as I mentioned, yes, there are times when I experience others. Until self is all that is known, the practice put forth in this journal is useful and helpful. And again, that is not a statement encouraging the rest of the world to turn my journal into their Bible. That's a statement from self to self. That's a statement to me, the one who is writing the journal. This is telling me that my guidance is in this journal, and that the best thing for me to do, if I know any others at all, if it's not all self, the best thing for me to do is to continue to practice what I'm writing in this journal. I will tell you that it is very easy to sit down in the morning and have this wonderful experience with seven steps and write out these statements that are sometimes quite profound. You'll find your own writings to be quite profound. Eagerly, you know, express them by sharing them in Facebook, which is totally okay. I think that sometimes these things have to be expressed. The outward expression is a natural part of the taking them in. But then, after that time has ended, to get up and walk away and not for the rest of the day think once about what was written and expressed in the morning. One thing that I try to do is I actually read my own Facebook posts multiple times a day. You could say I'm trying to be full of myself because I don't want to walk away and forget. But one thing I would like to do, and I'm going to go ahead and say that now, just say it out loud, is I would actually like to spend more time reading my own writing, reading my own journal. It seems right now to me that it would be helpful to be more full of myself. this self that is coming through. It would be helpful to be more full of myself. So I just will say that out loud as an intention, and I'll give my willingness to be less distracted, especially in the evening. Lots of times in the evening, I could be sitting there while Jasmine is watching TV, just reading my journal. And sometimes I do, and sometimes I don't. So my goal is to be more full of myself. So we can scroll down then and click number 273. And I will read Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj first. He said, "The world you can perceive is a very small world indeed. And it is entirely private. Take it to be a dream and be done with it." So, one thing that's interesting about the world is even if the world was real, right? Even if the world was 100% real, we each individually still experience an illusion of that world. Because we each individually still look at the world through a biased, point of view. I mean, we just don't see anything the same. Recently, there's been a couple discussions on my Facebook page about birthdays, because my birthday is coming up Tuesday. And it's interesting because one discussion was around the fact that I don't remember birthdays enough, that this is something that I should improve on. What did I say? Oh, my birthday's Thursday. It is not Tuesday. I was wrong. I know I have one coming. Anyway, one discussion was that I don't remember birthdays well enough, and I think I just demonstrated that. The other discussion was more that was more saying that not just I, but we put too much emphasis on birthdays. So we have one topic, birthdays, right? Two points of view. You know, one person saying birthdays are very important by remembering somebody's birthday. That's how you show love. And the other person saying birthdays are how we keep the belief in specialness alive. We need to let go of birthdays, right? And that's just one example that came to mind only because it's recent. But if we wanted to get together in a room and do a brainstorming list of things we see differently and start writing them on a flip chart, we could go on all day long and we would never exhaust the list. We see the world through the individual mind. And no two people are exactly alike. You cannot find any two people anywhere on the planet who will agree on everything. So even if the world was rock hard true, we still each individually experience an illusion of it just through our minds. It's pretty mind-boggling. So again, Sri Nisargadatta said, "The world you can perceive is a very small world indeed, and it is entirely private. Take it to be a dream and be done with it." This is going back to the thought I shared earlier that we can't trust our seeing. If there are 6.5 billion people on the planet, and I'm the only one that sees the way I do, why should I think I'm right? I mean, does that make any sense at all? So he's really telling us in different words, don't trust your seeing. Don't believe you're seeing. Just realize it's a dream. Realize it's an illusion. We could even say realize it's nonsense. And be done with it. That's what he's encouraging us to do. Now why don't we go to my journal, number 273. Here's what I wrote. No one sees the world exactly as I do. This should be evidence enough that something is wrong with my seeing, and my seeing cannot be trusted. Realize this and abandon my seeing. When I was speaking today at the Center for Inner Peace, I was using Peace Pilgrim. I was reading from Peace Pilgrim's book, Chapter 2. And one of the things that Peace Pilgrim says in Chapter 2 is she came to realize many things within herself. And this is probably one thing that she realized within herself, although she doesn't speak about it directly. But, you know, she was realizing many things within herself. But she said it would take a lot of time before the living caught up with the believing. Or, you know, we might say before the living caught up with the realizing. So we can realize that my singular point of view out of 6.5 billion point of views can't possibly be right. And we can make a decision to abandon our point of views. And we're going to find those point of views continuing to rise up. We're even going to find ourselves continuing to express them. I do it all the time. Let's see. What's an example? Okay, Jasmine gave us an example yesterday. I did this, I guess, actually a couple years ago. But I still do this kind of thing, right? Birthdays again. Birthdays are a big topic right now. We were talking about birthdays, and we were talking about when we went shopping for Danielle's birthday a couple years ago, and Jasmine wanted to buy a chocolate cake with chocolate icing. And apparently, I said something like, that's too much chocolate. And apparently I encouraged her to go to cupcakes. And I probably, what do we end up with, Danielle? White and strawberry. White with strawberry frosting and chocolate frosting, right? Yeah. I think we had both. Yeah. So we have white cakes and you could put strawberry or chocolate frosting on it. That was my point of view, right? Jasmine's point of view was chocolate cake with chocolate icing. And in fact, yesterday when we were discussing this, she was lobbying for this year on Danielle's birthday. We'll do chocolate cake with chocolate icing. Maybe we should ask Danielle for her point of view. But anyway, the point is, I will still hear myself say things like that. Like if this had happened yesterday, I might still hear myself say, that's too much chocolate. But what happens now is immediately after I say it, I notice it. I notice that's just my scene. That's just my point of view. What should make me think that my point of view is more relevant than Jasmine's point of view, or certainly Danielle's point of view on her birthday? So what's happening now is I am going through a process of learning that my scene isn't so important. But even though the decision was made probably on February 26, 2012, because that's when I had this realization. That's when I wrote this, right? Even though the decision was made on that day, it didn't automatically happen on that day that I quit having or expressing my point of view. What happened on that day was I became more aware of having and expressing a point of view, right? But it's just like what we read earlier. I need to be patient with those points of views. Or it's as Peace Pilgrim said, it takes a while for the living to catch up to the realizing. Yeah, I need to be patient with those points of views. I want to remember the wisdom that I realized that there's no way that my point of view can be that important. It's impossible, even if the world is real, right? Which I'm not saying it is, of course. The whole point of step two is it's not. But even if it is, how can one out of 6.5 billion points of view be right? It doesn't even make sense. My point of view must be meaningless. It has to be meaningless. It's lost in the crowd, right? And I need to see that. This is where my joy, my happiness, my peace is going to come from, is by realizing that my points of view are nothing. And in fact, it's funny because I said just a moment ago that my goal is to be full of myself. But notice that in order to be full of myself, I also have to not be so full of myself, right? Not so full of the individual self. and fill myself up with what I'm going to call the wisdom self. We call it the Holy Spirit, sometimes called divine self, higher self. Yesterday, Danielle and I had another discussion. I told her that I'm really done with ideas about enlightenment. There's just been a number of experiences that I've had this year where, enlightenment is just like an old thought for me, an old topic. We can put it on a shelf and let the dust gather on it now. I have nothing to do with that thought anymore. It was fun for a while, but now it's gone. And when I was telling Danielle that I was done with that, she said something like, well, then, then what's the goal or what are you aiming for, right? Something like that. And I said, just wisdom, just pure wisdom, nothing but wisdom, right? That's it. I want to be full of myself. But when I say full of myself, I mean the wisdom self, the one that is leading the writing of these journal entries, the one that wrote NTI, the one that wrote Inter-Ramana, the one that shows up to speak in Pal Talk. I want to be full of that self. And in order to be full of that self, right, then there can't be that other self in here taking up, some of the space. If we imagine the body as a vessel, I can't have some of the self that has individual point of views that thinks chocolate cake with chocolate icing is too much. She can't be here because if she's here, well, then I'm not full of the wisdom self. In the Bible, John the Baptist, from the point of view of the Bible, of course, again, there were thousands of points of view in that time. But from the point of view of the writers of the Bible, John the Baptist was, until Jesus came, John the Baptist was the big teacher of the time. Some people even whispered that maybe he was the Messiah, although, of course, he said he was not. But he was the big teacher of the time. And then Jesus came. And John the Baptist recognized Jesus as the Christ, the Messiah. And Jesus' time began. After Jesus' time began, John the Baptist said, I need to become less that he can become more. Right? I need to become less that he can become more. John could not continue to be the big teacher. He needed to back off and let Christ be the teacher. Well, we can use that same sentence. We can reinterpret that same sentence within ourself. The self that has been the teacher within our mind, the self that says chocolate cake with chocolate icing is too much, that self now needs to become less. So that I, right, the same I that Nisargadatta uses, so that I can become more, right? No one else sees the world exactly as I do. No one else. Not my brother, not my daughter, not my boyfriend, not my mom, not my dad. My dad's the closest, but I assure you, he does not see the world exactly as I do. This should be evidence enough that something is wrong with my seeing. And my seeing cannot be trusted. Realize this and abandon my scene and let Jasmine buy whatever kind of cake she wants. How's that sound? All right, so let's scroll down. And you can click on number 274. Okay, see, Danielle just jokingly, innocently whispered something and a point of view came up. Danielle said, chocolate with strawberry, and I immediately heard in my mind, gross, not chocolate with strawberry. Yeah. But now, Danielle, do you want chocolate cake with strawberry icing? Yes. Okay, so we know we're having October 2nd around this house. Mm-hmm. You see how those points of view work? Oh, no, not that. That's even worse than chocolate with chocolate. Yeah, points of view, meaningless. I need to become less that I may become more, right? Less full of myself, so that I can be more full of myself. Number 274, did I give you the link yet? I don't think I did. I got all caught up in the chocolate cake with strawberry icing. There you are. Okay, number 274, first Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj said, However long a life may be, it is but a moment and a dream. Like water for chocolate. I love that movie, by the way. However long a life may be, it is but a moment and a dream. One thing that we sometimes hear about are these yogis in, I think, typically in northern India, who are, I've heard, up to 750 years old. And I don't know if this is true or not. But let's just go with it for a moment. Let's just say it is. Let's say that there are yogis, through the practice of the mind, have learned to slow their breathing and slow their heart rate and slow everything down to the point that somehow their physical life is stretched out to hundreds of years, as much as 750 years. Now, what sometimes happens when people hear this, especially when, you know, the attachment to the body is very strong, people get the idea that spirituality can be used to extend the body's life. I've heard, and maybe you all have heard as well, that people will go so far as to say that the body does not have to die. Right? Well, Sri Nisargadatta is saying something differently here. Sri Nisargadatta is saying, however long a life may be, it is but a moment and a dream. He's saying even 750 years is nothing, and it's not real. That's not who you are. That's not the truth of who you are, right? It's not it. That's not it. However long a life may be, it is but a moment and a dream. So let's look at number 274 in my journal. Release the tendency to cling to body life as true life. This goes for the body life that appears to be oneself and the body lives that appear to be others. There is something else to see, something beyond the body, something without end. And what I remember is that this was written for me just days after my grandmother died, and I went to her funeral. So, it fit in well there in the timing of my life. But release the tendency to cling to body life as true life. That sentence alone is so important. Release the tendency to cling to body life as true life. If I feel that with spirituality I can make myself, meaning this body, live forever and never die, right? Aren't I saying that this body life is my true life? My mind has gone kind of blank, so which is why I'm not speaking. You cannot speak if you have no words. But my mind went blank when I asked a question. And the question was, how else do we demonstrate that we are clinging to body life as true life? And, you know, one answer that just came after I said that out loud is sometimes in the way that we wish for ourselves or others to be physically healed. Now, I know for a fact that physical healings happen. Physical healings have happened to me. miraculous physical healing. So I know that they happen. So this is not meant to be, saying there's something wrong with physical healings. Physical healings happen. They do. And there's nothing wrong with anything that happens. But sometimes in the way that we wish for them, If you look inside the wish for the physical healing, you'll find the belief that body life is true life. And that if something happens to this body, right, a life is lost. That's probably much more common for most of us than the idea that we should keep the body alive forever, although that does show up, you know, in our spiritual circles. I don't think that's as common as wanting to have the physical healings. Release the tendency to cling to body life as true life. This goes for the body life that appears to be oneself and the body lives that appear to be others. There is something else to see, something beyond the body, something without end. So what's a practical use of this teaching? Well, I would say a practical use would be to just notice when we are seeing a body life as true life and just bring our noticing to it. And then after we bring our noticing to it, give our willingness to realize what true life is. It's very difficult for most of us, I think. In fact, you know, if you look at the Bible, if you look at the Garden of Gethsemane, and of course, you know, I think we all perceive Jesus as a great teacher. We perceive Jesus as a master. Many people perceive Jesus as enlightened. Some, as you know, even perceive him as the only holy Son of God. But if you look at the Bible and you look at the story of the Garden of Gethsemane, when Jesus knew that he was going to be facing arrest and possibly he even knew he was going to be facing crucifixion, he had a very difficult time accepting within his mind what was about to happen. And when he speaks to the apostles, when he comes out of the garden the first time and he finds Peter, James, and John sleeping, and he speaks to them about this, he says, "The spirit is willing, but the body is weak." And what he is referring to there is what we often call the split mind, but he's referring to how strong that attachment to the body is. Ramana Maharshi spoke about the attachment to the body as well and said it's the strongest of all attachments. In my own journaling, as we go forward with the Seven Steps journaling, you will see that my own inner self said one reason that we focus so much on the fact that the world is not real is because there would be resistance, too much resistance, if we spent just as much time focusing on the fact that the body is not real. That the attachment to the body is actually much stronger than the attachment to the world. So even though we have a strong attachment to the world, that's actually an easier place for us to let spirit or wisdom in and begin helping us to see that's not true. We are more willing to allow that attachment to be broken than we are the attachment to the body. But if the attachment to the world falls first, then the attachment to the body can also fall because the body is obviously a part of the world, right? So if there is no world, then there also cannot be a body. But it's easier for us to allow spirit to teach us there is no world than to teach us there is no body, because that attachment is so strong. And again, we will see that not only in how we are with our own bodies, but how we are with the bodies of our loved ones. And so the best thing that we can do is, again, not dive fully into that attachment. When we notice the desire to dive fully into the attachment to the body, if we can just notice it, even if we're noticing the desire, we're actually holding back a little. Right now, the course every day is, I am not a body, right? That's how the course lessons start every day right now. I am not a body. So we want to give our willingness to hold back from fully diving into that attachment whenever that attachment appears. We want to give our willingness to hold back from fully diving into that attachment, right? And then again, be patient with ourselves. Be patient with the fact that the attachment shows up time and time again, because we have been told by many masters that this attachment is the most difficult one to break. Release the tendency to cling to body life as true life. This goes for the body life that appears to be oneself and the body lives that appear to be others. There is something else to see, something beyond the body, something without end. All right, so there's just a few minutes left, and I don't want to start another one, so I don't like to rush through any of these. So what I'm doing is reaching over to my little pile of CDs, and I'll pull out another Israel song. What do you guys want to hear? Whoever types in first will get it. You have a choice, Hava Negila or Hallelujah. Hava. Dev probably had Hava half typed before I finished the sentence. All right, Hava and Hallelujah tend to be the two favorites, but we will listen to Hava Negila, and then it will be time for Dove to introduce Carol. Right, so that's it. Hava. And if anybody wants to see the very interesting translation of that, it was posted on my Facebook page. You may have to scroll down a little to find it, but it's there. Releasing the mic, I will see you all tomorrow. Bye-bye.